This is Fam Electric Ghost, and we're live on the air with Cherie Prince. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Well, I'm doing fine. This is actually the last podcast for 2023, because we'll be starting it up again at the beginning of the new year. But I want to welcome you to the Fam Electric Ghost podcast, it's always good to have new folks on the show.
Well, look, I'm glad to be here. I like to feel like maybe you saved the best for last, so it's an honor.
And I also want to let people know that this is going to be episode 1036 of the Fam Electric Ghost podcast, tracking on Apple Podcast since 2016. And today we do have your website up, so CherieProince.com, and then we've got the /AP blueprint. That will be fully clickable for anybody who's interested on all the published versions of the podcast, even the Facebook, YouTube, and Twitch we're on right now. That link will be active once we're actually finished with the show tonight. So you'll be able to click on that everywhere that the podcast is viewed or listened to, so people can contact you that way. So if they click on that, what would the audience get?
So I do a monthly webinar where I teach people about the basics for asset protection. And it is a free webinar once a month for about an hour. We get you in and out over your lunch break if you have one around that time. And we just talk about things you can do to protect your legacy personally and your business.
That's awesome, because what we're going to talk about today is building a strong foundation, legal protections for entrepreneurs. And we started this podcast primarily talking to creators who happen to be like musicians, filmmakers, artists. And we have a tendency not to think about things like that, because we put all of their assets into our art. And then we're like, okay, we believe in it and it will come back. But sometimes we probably need to be more conservative than we are, or more into thinking about asset protection, where a lot of times we throw everything at the project. So, that given that kind of mindset, how you know, maybe that's a good kind of starting point. If you have somebody that's a creative person who's used to kind of throwing everything at it and having very, you know, minimal assets left after when they work on projects, what kind of strategy would you think of for a person like that?
First, I tell people not to really concentrate on the number or the amount of assets they have. You know, everything you have needs to be protected. No matter where you are in the world, we all have an expiration date. So what happens to your stuff at your expiration? And so we look at it like transitioning, whether we're leaving things to family members, whether we're leaving business interests to a business partner, a creative partner. So we really try to start with the basics. If you're a creative person, you still should have something like a living will, maybe a power of attorney, a HIPAA authorization form. You may have a will or a trust. So those are just the basic things that everybody needs. Then we kind of step it up a little bit and we talk about things that you need for your business. And that is, oh, look, I know we only have a limited amount of time, but that is a really fun conversation for me. So, so step one, personally, we get you situated, and then we talk about your business a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's important, because a lot of creative people, we might own masters, copyrights, licensing contracts. And if we don't have a will, well, where is that going to go to? Like a lot of us today, we have sync licensing, which is a complicated thing. But the way artists make money now today, you know, musicians, is we tend to make them through sync licensing contracts, which means your music might be licensed to a film, to a Madison Avenue, advertising company, to a video game company. If you don't have a will, then where's that money going to come to after you're gone if you don't set that up?
So here's the interesting thing. You may not have a plan, but the government has a plan for your assets. So every state in the United States, they have a set of laws for what's called intestate succession, which basically means you die without a will. So, and it says for each state, what happens, you know, depending on where you live, all of it may go to your spouse. Or half may go to your spouse, half may go to your children. If you don't have a spouse or children, you know, there's already a plan in place in every state in the United States. And different countries do it differently. But what happens if you may be estranged from, you know, you don't have a spouse, you don't have kids, and you may be estranged from your family? and you really don't want them to have all your wealth. Maybe you want to give it to charity. It's worth taking the time to put together a plan. And I love that you talked about intellectual property and different rights to your masters and your music, because most creatives or business owners, they don't even think about IP. They're thinking about real estate and personal property. Mm-hmm. But IP is a huge thing to consider.
Yeah, today, I mean, I'm a software designer in my day job. So until, you know, that's hard to kind of pin down, but it's worth, you know, the type of stuff we build is worth millions of dollars. And it's not something like a house. It's not your car. It's not land. It's not real estate. But those software designs, you know, if you were part of the, you know, company and you've got ownership in it, they're worth lots of money. And just because you can't hold your hands on that, it's just like the song or the film or the piece of art that might be like digital art, you know, might be in that new space where there's so many things that are out there on the net in terms of creativity, where people have published works that don't have physical form.
Yeah. And one example I love to give people just to kind of make it more real, you know, look at Michael Jackson's estate or Prince's estate. You know, they are no longer with us, but their music is, I hate to say eternal, but their estates will be open in perpetuity because there are so many royalties that the estate a lot of times makes more money than the artist when the artist was alive.
Yeah. So, it's a big problem. It's like the Hendrix estate, because Hendrix had a big problem. I'm a big music head, but he had a massive problem. When he died in the 70s, he had signed so many contracts just to work, that his family had to weed through so many problems. Even to this day, there are people fighting rights for performances. There's a famous performance from the Royal Albert Hall from like 68 that's still not seen the light of day because it's still in litigation.
Wow.
It's full filmed performance and it still hasn't got out of litigation to figure out who's going to get what.
And see, you brought up something that's really important, because when we think about asset protection, we're trying to be proactive, but a lot of people don't consider the effect of contracts during their lifetime, because the contracts during your lifetime become binding on your heirs when you pass away. So you may be thinking, okay, when I'm gone, they'll just bury me or cremate me and that's it. No, you still have, you know, a legacy to consider. So yeah, that's a very good point.
Yeah, it's very, you got to be careful. Because a lot of times I think a lot of artists really do need to have an attorney to help them, because when they're signing these contracts, they really need to have some, you know, because a lot of times the work we do is based, you know, in the wrapper is the contract. And if you don't own the master, you don't own the distribution, or it's not a fair deal and you just did it to get an advance and you're just thinking short term and you didn't think about like, oh, they actually own the film rights. They own the rights if they want to use it for advertising, if they want to turn something into a toy. And then you've lost all this ability to make money because you kind of undersold yourself because you didn't have good representation. It's kind of an artist story. It's kind of a tragic story all the time.
And you know, a more recent story, and I'm going to, you know, when I talk about this, I'm going to take a different angle. So just watch out. The recent litigation with P. Diddy and Cassie. Now, looking at the standpoint from the employer, employee, or contract litigation, he had her in a 10 album contract. Mm. And I think she only put one album out. And so, I mean, you can even argue that it's indentured servitude, because, you know, some people may say that he never intended for her to do any of those albums, but for him to have control over her career.
Yeah, you lock somebody down. It's unreasonable to think somebody, if they're not super big, how could they ever have 10 albums?
Right? But it was a measure of control. And so that's, you know, that's why you have to be very careful about the contracts you enter into and the way that you protect your assets. Her main asset and the way that she feeds her family is through performance. And if she's not allowed to perform and make money, you know, what assets do you have? So that's just something to think about.
Yeah, it's a lot of that's true, because a lot of times in music today, the rates we get for streaming, people might not realize it's like 0.004, 0.005 of a penny per stream on any of the major platforms. You have to do billions of streams to make any money. And even the big guys argue about the money that they get. So the main thing that people do is sync licensing, performance, merchandising. So like your t-shirt will give you more money than your album. Your poster will give you more money than your record. Your ticket for your show will give you more money than your record. And that's kind of sad until you license that song to a film or a TV show or an advertisement. Then you start, the rates go significantly up. So like artists have figured out that, you know, we do have to deal with lawyers. We do have to start thinking about, because we might not understand the best deal because that's not our area. So how do we know how to negotiate or have a contract that's actually advantageous to ourselves?
Well, and another thing to think about as well, and this is, you know, this has become more popular with student athletes, but the name, image, and likeness, you know, opportunities that are available for athletes. So now you have teenagers or young adults who are monetizing based on, you know, some skill or ability they have, or because they're an influencer. How do you handle those things?
Yeah, you know, and then how do you deal with AI? Because somebody suddenly, if you didn't notice there was an AI part of that contract, they could take your image and then copy it and then not pay you, pay you one time. Pay exactly. Your one-time fee. If you get a one-time fee, it's a ripoff, because if they use that in AI, they're going to spread it out everywhere and they're going to make a lot of money. And then you only paid you like a work for hire, which is always the big rub for artists. They got to be careful doing work for hire versus getting royalties.
Oh yeah. So, and there was one, I think a show called Black Mirror that made fun, you know, well, made fun of the whole, you know, AI, where they had taken, I think, Selma Hayek's image and used it in perpetuity because she had signed a contract and didn't read the fine print. So, I mean, it's a real thing. And I think over time, we're going to be seeing it happen more and more if people are not very careful.
Well, it's also like, there's one thing I always try to tell people, like sometimes the tech gets ahead of the law. So back in the day with hip hop, there were samplers like Akai MPC, and people get to sample everything and they didn't clear the sample. And so you had bands like De La Soul for years, they couldn't put their stuff out because they got caught up in litigation because they didn't clear their samples. Tommy Boy didn't clear the samples for like until like last year, early this year, they finally were able to go back and put those records out. It took forever to get the legal work done to clear it and actually have make it legal that you could use those things. So AI is kind of like, to me, the same kind of scenario. The AI is way ahead of the law in terms of sometimes people are able to, you know, take pieces of trademarked, copyrighted, you know, stuff that's patented and then grab it and say, oh, it's machine learning. And then people are challenging that and say, well, that's machine learning is taking something that's exactly from my copyrighted piece of work.
And I mean, I think that it happens so much. More recently, Kanye, I think, has some new music out, and there was a sample from NSYNC, I believe, that he did not clear, either NSYNC or the Backstreet Boys. I get them confused. But literally, it's great music, but he did not clear it, but he still put the music out. So now I'm just kind of waiting to see if there's going to be some.
Yeah, you will get hit. Because they, you know, there are places that will tell you, like I'm a SoundCloud artist, and it tells you don't upload it if you didn't clear the sample.
Because I guess Kanye says he doesn't care. He said, I'm yay. I'm going to do it anyway.
Yeah. Well, people do what they want. Then they get cease and desist letter, and they got to pay the money. Like Ice Ice Baby, he said it wasn't. Well, that's just that's a Queen Bowie song, but I changed the beat. It's like, no, you didn't. And then he had to pay.
Yeah. Same thing with, Pharrell and, oh my gosh, I'm drawing a blank. The song that they, for Marvin Gaye's family.
Oh yeah, yeah, that song. Yeah, he got hit with that. Yeah, I remember. Yeah. It's just difficult because, you know, I being a musician, I'm more of a jazz musician, an experimental musician. I got all my synths behind me. So I play my stuff. I actually write and play on the piano and the keyboards. But today there's a lot of kids, a lot of people learn. They don't really know how to play. They more of a producers, and so they sample, and there's a skill to sampling. I'm not going to say it's not a skill, but I'm like, why? I'm not going to play it again. I'm just going to go on my Moog and I'm going to create my own beat. I'm going to create my own riff, and I never get challenges because my stuff's all original. But you know, the kids today, well, I don't have time to do that. Well, I don't know how to do that, so they're doing the sample game. But you've got to clear it. you know, you gotta know what you're doing, what the consequences of what you're doing. Like, you could make that beat, but you might have to pay for it.
Yeah. And I think it's somewhat of a lost art as well, because when it's so easy to use technology, why would I learn how to play an instrument when I can just go to my mixing board and, you know, do the same thing?
Well, then you have to get some company to clear your samples. And some people are getting signed and they got a whole division that will clear all the samples. And so the guy doesn't have to worry about it. But if you're starting off without those people behind you, and you just think that you can do that. And I've run into a lot of young people say, well, you know, my favorite artist does it. Yeah, but they've got a whole back room of people that cleared those. And you didn't. So that's the difference. Right. You know, so it's like, just because you hear that doesn't mean that you could do that unless you understand the full consequence of what you're doing. But that's like, you know, it's like anything you get into, like a will. Like, if you don't have the will, then like the state's going to take over. And, you know, that, you know, people might not want, you know, what the state does is like, well, I didn't want them to do that. Well, you didn't tell them what to do.
So, and you know what? We're talking about wills, but I will also tell folks, consider a trust. Because, you know, the first thing our minds jump to, because we've been conditioned, is get a will. But maybe you get a trust, or maybe you don't need either or. Maybe there are some things you can do during your lifetime that will automatically transfer your assets upon your death so that there's not this extra expense. But that's like an individual conversation for everybody. Now, what I'll tell people is, yes, I'm a licensed attorney, but I'm also an asset protection coach. And I've been asked several times, what's the difference? The difference is, being an attorney and giving legal advice, you're licensed. But as an asset protection coach, I kind of work as a quarterback on your asset protection team. And
like I get a financial advisor, like an investment banker type of thing, or is it different?
A little bit different. I don't give financial advice. So if you're in business, anybody who's in business, you should have a couple of things already in place. If you're paying taxes, you have a tax preparer or a CPA. You should have an attorney, even if they're not a retainer, an attorney that you have a relationship with. You are paying insurance premiums for something. So you should have an insurance broker that you can call. You should have a bank account. So you have a relationship with a banker. And what I do, because a lot of times these people are working in silos, you know, they're just touching base with you.
From the whole picture. Right. You get the big picture of everything so you can see if there's problems or overlap or inconsistencies or something.
Right. And I put these people together. I get them, you know, either doing annual, semi-annual, or quarterly meetings. And then we start making shared goals to move the business further, faster. And what happens is you start, you know, saving more money. Because is your insurance agent, how many insurance agents are going to tell you you're paying too much in insurance premiums?
And they're not going to do that.
They're not going to do it.
And I'm going to sell you another policy.
And I'm not saying they're dishonest, but maybe don't have the full picture. Okay. Yeah. So what I found when I started working on a team for people, we start looking at everything you're doing in your business. And so I look at your insurance policies. Maybe you're paying $1,000 a month. I'm just going to use it as a good round number, $1,000 a month in premiums. Well, if I set up a separate entity for you to do something that is complementary to your business, what that's going to do is going to give you more legal protection. We're going to work with your accountant to make sure that, you know, once this business hits a certain dollar amount, we start, you know, putting some money over here. We're going to reduce your tax liability. And what does that also do? It reduces your insurance premiums. So now, instead of paying maybe $1,000 a month in premiums, you're paying $500 a month. And you have this extra $500 for advertising, for your reserve account, to put back into your business, to pay for employee benefits. And you also have a more efficient business because everybody on your team is working towards the same goals and they're not duplicating services and they're being more efficient.
Yeah, so you're basically doing like an efficiency check to make sure that people aren't wasting money or there's overlap, there's unnecessary spending, you close things or renegotiate the contract, or, you know, because you've changed the structure of the business to be aligned rather than siloed. So,
right. Yeah, I refer to it as putting a moat around your assets. I'm putting a barrier between you, claims, creditors, and all those bad things that can put you out of business.
So you're moving somebody from being like a sole proprietor to having some more legal protections.
Right. Moving you from being an operator to an actual owner, because you know, if you're starting out as a solopreneur, you may spend so much time working in your business that you cannot work on your business. So you already got people that you're paying in some form or fashion. Let them start working on your business while you make that transition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause like, so that's moving toward like incorporation rather than somebody being like an, you know, to actually maybe talk about what's the step. Cause somebody might be starting as a business and they're like, you know, they're just a sole proprietor. Then they might move to like an LLC, or they might move to a small corporation, or, you know, what are the benefits, or what size do you need to be? What profit level do you have to be at to make those decisions?
So I would say anyone who's operating as a sole proprietor, that means that you have not formed any sort of entity at all with the state that you're in. I'm going to spank you on the hand because that's bad. You know, when you're young, your mama say, that's bad. Don't do that. Okay, that's bad. Don't do that. Because what you do, you open yourself up for liability, you know, and a lot of times it's easy, especially as a creative person, because you're just out, you know, making the music, producing the art, and that's your sole focus. And depending on how successful you are, you may not think it's worth the investment to actually, you know, go through the formalities of opening a company. But that's really the wrong attitude to take. Anyone who's in business needs at least one business entity. Because what it does, one, you have tax savings. Now, I don't give tax advice, but a lot of the work that I do yields tax benefits. So you have write-offs that you can have as a business that you will not have as a sole proprietor. Now, and also as a sole proprietor, you're using your social security number for everything. Mm-hmm. Well, if you do not have a stellar credit rating, or I'll say if you are credit challenged, or maybe you just don't have a credit history at all, having business credit and doing things in the name of your business makes it easier for you to get things done. Also, if the business is unsuccessful, it's easier to close the business down and open a new business and still maintain your good credit, your good personal credit. So that's one of the main reasons.
Is that like the tax ID number of the corporation versus your social security for your sole proprietorship?
Exactly. Because as a sole proprietor, everything, you're using your social security number for everything. But if you have an LLC or a corporation, you're going to have a tax ID number, mm-hmm. and you're just keeping things separate. You know, the term that I hate to hear is the word commingling. When mm-hmm. you start putting business money in personal accounts, that's bad, 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 bad. Because what it allows to happen is if you're sued and somebody says, well, she doesn't have a real business, they can reach into your personal savings and your personal assets, you know, to get money to satisfy a judgment against you.
Yeah, that's a bad scenario. So, yeah, it's a better to protect yourself if you feel like you can, I think some people feel the overhead. It's like, well, I don't know if I want to pay, you know, for the services, because a lot of people, like, they're just thinking about, well, I want the money so I can put it into the art or put it into the project. If I have to put X here, then I can't put the X there. But I think you have to have a bigger plan than that, from what you're saying.
And some of it's mindset. So, you know, for those people, they are looking at it as an expense. It's not an expense. It's an investment. It's an investment in you and your future, because you're really not in business if you're not doing business. You know, you're not. And over time, you will recognize a savings. You know, the cost to start an LLC in most states, less than $100. You know, it's a form that's filed with the Secretary of State's office. I advise using an attorney, but you can actually do it yourself. You can do it yourself. Most forms are very simple. Where you get into trouble over time is that if you don't update it, because your business can be dissolved. And so that's when you run into issues. But just getting started, if you're in business, take the time to set it up properly. Because what happens when you get a huge windfall? How do you handle that if you're not set up properly?
Yeah, yeah. If you actually get a sync licensing deal and you're an artist and you didn't go into that, you're a sole proprietor, and suddenly you get that big payday and it comes in, you know, some of these deals can be $100,000. They could be like, could be $1 million if you get the right deal. And so suddenly, like, the tax consequences of getting that hit with your social security number versus your tax ID number, and then having the right, you know, structure so you don't get hit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it's so people just don't think about it until it's too late. You know, what happens if you get sued and there's this huge judgment against you? Well, it's not against you now. It's against the company. And there are several things you can do with the company. Like if you filed a company bankruptcy, that's not affecting you personally. Mm-hmm. You know, there are just so many things. You have more options. And I tell people options are good.
Yeah, because businesses don't always succeed. And that's what they would say. You can see a business where that failed and the guy goes to the next business. You know, he still was able to potentially entrepreneurs, like the first thing they do doesn't always hit. Exactly. So that they're using the protection of the law and the structure of setting up a company versus that being a sole proprietorship. And then like you're sunk. Like if you go Chapter 7 and it was you're not getting the next loan. Because that's not you.
Exactly. So asset protection is so important. And for those out there who are thinking, well, I really don't have any assets or, you know, things are not big for me right now. I love the example that Michael Jordan has set. So, you know, I've been asked in the past if I had one asset, you know, that I could own, what would it be? It would be Michael Jordan's IP rights to the Air Jordan logo. That is a $1 billion asset. What if Michael Jordan did not have that wrapped up in a corporation or a trust? You know, what would that look like? You know, he's on his second marriage. He has two sets of children. I'm not sure what sort of estate planning he's done, but I would imagine that at the time he expires, if he does not have that set up properly, his heirs would definitely be in a huge fight.
Yeah, that's a problem. Because you never know if people actually did it right, you know, but That is an issue because, like, you know, everybody hears about the Prince estate. There's all this stuff tied up when he, you know, was outside of Warner Brothers. He was signing contracts with like record labels and different companies and distribution networks. And some of that stuff is still tied up because they didn't resolve it because like the Warner stuff was all in one place and that kind of got handled. But the other things, not so the same story.
So. Yeah. And, you know, there's one artist that I love, and she, I would call it a great attempt at estate planning, but I'm still kind of upset with her attorneys, Whitney Houston. So as much money as Whitney had, Whitney had a will and not a trust. And the difference is a will is a public document. You know, it's filed at a courthouse. Anybody can go see it unless it's under seal. And, you know, if you were someone with substantial wealth, I don't know if I'd want everybody to know exactly what I left my heirs because that makes them a target.
Yeah,
you probably don't.
Yeah, that's probably not a good idea. You probably should have if you want to keep it private, you don't want the whole world looking at some decisions if they're actually private personal decisions.
Oh, yeah. But now, okay, so the will part, I'm kind of upset with her folks about. But I would have gotten the trust. The part that I really like is the way that she structured the distribution for her daughter, Bobby Christina. You know, if you are someone who has that much wealth, she didn't leave it all to her daughter at one time. She got X amount of dollars at this age, mm-hmm. And she got lump sums. And like, she even, yeah, and she made it that if she were, you know, if her daughter passed away, which we did see that eventually happened, Whitney was very smart because her daughter's heirs would have been Bobby's children. And Whitney did not want her money going to Bobby's kids. Think about it.
Yeah.
Think about it. Yeah. So, I mean, who knew that her daughter would pass away so young, but she passed away unmarried. And had Whitney not put certain things in her asset protection plan, Bobby's kids would have been living on Whitney's money right now, today.
Mm. Yeah. So she kind of, at least somebody was kind of had the foresight. Yeah, you have to kind of, you do need to consider the things. And some people, you know, because, you know, death is not something they want to think about. Right. And the whole idea of planning, you know, then gets them kind of start thinking about their mortality and they don't want to think about it. But it's like, it's an important decision to make for all kinds of reasons. You do need to, you know, focus forward if you've got all these assets, which are like, you know, the intellectual property, the physical property, you know, the homes, whatever. You do have to have some kind of idea or the world's going to take it. And then, you know, things are going to not be what your heirs or people around you deserve because you're not taking care of it. You need to like, take care of that, like to take care of the day to day.
And a lot of people, especially if you are the second or third spouse. You know, I've had people come to me and, you know, they may be wife number two or three, and their husband forgot to update the beneficiary designation. So wife number one may have gotten an old insurance policy, or there may have been a piece of property in wife number two's name. And I'm wife number three. I've had to pay for the funeral, all final expenses, and I'm grieving the loss of my husband, and I'm having to deal with, you know, remnants of the past.
Yeah, because they didn't think it through. Because like a lot of times, people don't want to touch those insurance contracts. You know, you did it when you signed it. You don't ever think to call them up to do. So that's the thing I'm wondering. Like, you do this as the whole holistic picture. So part of that holistic picture is somebody's got insurance contracts, if they got other things, like you do a review, right? To see is like, it does this make sense for where you are now, right? You're doing that full review.
And not only that, but I tell people, treat it like a wellness visit. So if you're going to get an annual physical, treat this like your financial physical for your business. And, you know, anytime there's a life event, you know, did you get a divorce? Did you get married? Did one of your children, you know, reach the age of majority? You know, are they too old for your health insurance now? Mm-hmm. Have they gotten married? Because maybe, you know, you have adult children and you have minor children. And so your minor children may need more than your adult children because they're able to work. You know, they may have a family.
Change the beneficiary structure.
Yeah, exactly.
Or even the beneficiaries, because like now this person kind of aged out. They don't need it as much. Maybe they want the grandkid to get it. Or maybe you want somebody else to get it. You know, so you have to make an assessment, like we said, to like where's your life now versus where it was when you signed that document, you know.
And another thing that's really tricky, and people don't consider this, but what happens if what you left to your children, one of your children goes through a divorce? And so now, you know, the 20 acres of land that I left you, that my mother left me, is part of your divorce settlement. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not really what you want to happen. And so there are so many creative things you can do on the front end, but it just takes being intentional. Yeah. And it's not an expense. It's an investment.
Yeah, just the investment in like the family not getting into fights, you know, or your loved one not getting like the rug taken out from under them because you didn't take the time to look at your first marriage, or you didn't look at your old assets or your old contracts. Like maybe you had contracts for your royalties, and they might have beneficiaries on those contracts that like, what happens if it doesn't go to you? Like, and you might have put it to your first wife and forgot to change it to your second wife.
Exactly. Or
your third wife, and then suddenly like they're getting all the money, and that's where all your money's coming from that. And you didn't think about it.
So can I share an asset protection tip with you? One thing you may want to consider if you are a creative, and you may have royalties that, you know, will pay in perpetuity, consider not leaving those to natural beneficiaries. Leave it to a trust and make sure the trust is set up generically based on your family, who's alive, who passes away, and you put restrictions within the trust that will prevent those assets from being part of a marital distribution settlement or a divorce.
That's a bigger idea. That's a better plan than a lot of people probably don't do that. And then they run into the problem because they didn't think of it. They need to put it into the trust because everybody thinks, like you said, about the will. And they don't think the trust seems like a better idea as people are getting into these very complex arrangements because of the way life is, the way you're getting paid, it might be complex. Like you might have Bitcoin, you might have all these assets coming from overseas, money transfers and, you know, systems, and you might have money in like Asian markets outside of the US. You got, you know, banker in Hong Kong and you set something up there and then you didn't figure out like, well, you know, it's going to a Swedish bank account. Like, you know, what's going on? It's like, did you look at the whole picture and have a bigger vision than just the narrow focus? Like, why did you even do that? You need to look at the bigger picture. I think a lot of people don't have the big picture view. Mm-hmm. They tend to be in lanes and say, well, this is for this is for that, without seeing, you know, the issues with that.
So another thing to consider, because more people are either getting divorced or just deciding to just not be married, they're in partnerships. And so what happens when you're in a partnership and you are a creative person and the person that's in the partnership with you says, well, yeah, that song that Cherie wrote, I contributed 50% to it. And Cherie doesn't have a will. And I've been with Cherie for, you know, 20 years. And everybody knows that I helped her create every piece of art that she ever made. Mm-hmm. If you have all this stuff in a trust to begin with, it alleviates a lot of that. And also, if you decide not to be married, but just to be in a partnership and to just do life together, I'd recommend that everything you do, do it contractually. So on the front end, there's no misunderstanding. And, you know, maybe you and this life partner, maybe you have kids. That's a whole nother level of complexity now if you do not have a will or a trust. So consider using contracts, a will and or a trust to kind of clean those things up.
Does the common law, like wife or husband, come into play? Like if you go like 10 years,
okay,
does that come into play? Like it's going to suddenly the state's going to say, well, it's like, it is like this and you have to do that. You know, does that come into play?
If it is a common law state, every state is not common law. Some people think no matter where you are in the world, if I've been together with you 10 years, no, because I'm in Mississippi and that's not the case.
Like Massachusetts or New York, or I don't know which states. I know Massachusetts is supposed to be a commonwealth, so I'm thinking that's common law. But
and you got to be super careful. Give you an example. Halle Berry. Now, awesome actress. But Halle, you need to move. I think she's in California. You know, you have two children that you're paying somebody else child support for and separate maintenance. And the first child, they were not married. The second child, they were married. And so when you're planning, also consider, like you just mentioned, the state that you live in, because if something happens to your business interest or your family dynamic, do you see how that affects your overall asset protection plan?
Yeah. Yeah. If you don't understand your state law and you got, you know, you're incorporated in that state, you got married in that state, or you've been in a relationship in that state, then it's going to apply. Right. So if you're in a common law state, then 10 years does apply. If you're not, then maybe it doesn't. But you kind of, some people don't think about the things that are around them. They kind of don't have the situational awareness. and that's where you need people like yourself to kind of come in. Because like, yeah, I'm an artist. So I don't think about those things, right? So yeah, but you probably should. And if you don't, then you should have somebody that kind of guides you at least a couple times a year and gets your head around it. And maybe even if you're not paying attention, at least like you trust them to help you start to make the right decisions.
Right. Because, you know, if I were representing Halle Berry, you know, after that first situation with her daughter, I would have said, Halle, you need to move. You know, you can buy a big house anywhere. You need to move. So now with the second child, you know, it's part of, I guess, the divorce settlement. Not only is she paying her ex-husband child support, but he also gets a percentage of all of her earnings as an artist. And I'm not sure for how long.
That's
kind of crazy, because I would have told Halle, this is what you need to do, Halle. You know, before you get married, put this stuff in a trust, have a prenup. Oh, you didn't get a prenup? Let's do a postnup. There are so many things she could have done before things got bad and she was headed toward divorce. But I don't think anybody was, you know, like, let me talk to you, Halle.
Yeah. Well, that's the problem. I think some people, maybe they think, you know, they live in this kind of, you know, they kind of got their eyes not on the prize, and they're thinking things are one way when they're not. And so it's hard to deal with the reality, because like then it hits you hard. Like if you've been kind of like denying what's around you and you don't want to deal with the truth of the actual situation, then you're in denial. And I think a lot of people end up having problems where they need a counselor on top of, before they even get to the lawyer, to give them the kind of perspective, like you're doing something that's kind of codependent. You're not thinking about your own self-interest. You're not protecting yourself, but you might have a tendency because you haven't solved that problem. So you might not even be ready to get to the lawyer because you can't even see that without going to the counselor.
Well, and you know what? I have a good friend who shared something with me literally this week. We're always bouncing stuff off each other. And he was like, Cherie, some people just mimic the best options they've seen. So if you've never seen some of this stuff in practice, you know, maybe you're from Iowa and it's your dream to go to Hollywood, make it big and be an actress. You've never seen a model of an actress in Iowa who's been successful, who has these things available to them. So now you're out in Hollywood and you have these people who know the game that may take advantage of you. Mm. That's why, you know, you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah, you get a manager and you think they're taking care of you and they're kind of taking care of your own interest. You got to be careful because, like, you can get a whole management structure around you and everything's like 80-20. And because you're getting big money, I mean, this happened with the Beatles. When the Beatles at their heyday, they had, like, Brian Epstein had, like, the worst deal in, like, music history. Their royalty deal was terrible. And it got renegotiated, like, in 1970. But they didn't even notice how bad it was because they were so big. They were getting so much money, they didn't even realize how much more money they could have got because they were getting like terrible rates. It's like unbelievably low rates for what, but it was so much money coming in because of Beatlemania that they didn't even see it. And their management was kind of masking it, and they were just on this train. And you got to be careful when you're like an entertainer because people around you, they're supposed to be serving you. Sometimes they're not serving you. And you need that other set of eyes to check.
Well, I mean, look at TLC. Literally, they were the biggest girl group in the world at some point, and they were driving RAV4s. Come on now, RAV4s. I'm not knocking RAV4s. Toyota makes a
You should have a Lamborghini.
I mean, Toyota makes a solid truck. I'm not knocking the RAV4, you know, you're the biggest girl group in the world,
and Range Rover, maybe.
Toni Braxton filed bankruptcy twice. Now, the first time was management. The second time, I think there was like a illness related thing. But still, there should have been some protections in there that even an illness you have. And I'm going to give you a quick backstory. My mom passed away at 36. Mm-hmm. And by that time, she'd been in a nursing home for 3 years. So who thinks at 33 you're going to need long-term care insurance?
You
need, a designation for your two minor children, a designation of guardianship. But these are things as part of your asset protection plan you have to think about. You know, you're thinking, well, I'm too young to be thinking about nursing home care or assisted living. You are not. You know, what if you're in a bad car accident and you're unable to care for yourself, or a skiing accident, a swimming accident? You know, Kobe Bryant, who knew?
Yeah, that would happen. Yeah, I mean, we have a lot of problems today because, you know, we have these big, you know, we just went through the pandemic. And because of the pandemic, there's like long-term care implications of the pandemic. There's issues that people might have. They really should look into what you just said, the long-term care, because COVID, if you read the medical journals, it has a long-term effect and it has a potential to put you in that nursing home. A lot of people might end up there a lot earlier than they ever thought. And they don't think about it because they're like, oh, I'm 30, I'm 20, I'm 40. I'm not ready to think about that. But regardless of this, you know, the accident, there are things happening in the world that maybe you should think about those type of things. But people, I think is the mindset was like, that's not something I got to worry about till I'm 70.
Oh, no.
And they like, that's not always the case.
I mean, literally, people were being, you know, diagnosed on Thursday with COVID and 2 weeks later they were dead.
Yeah.
Like, and so who knew that, like, now my family, if you don't have burial insurance, now you have to scrap up money to bury this family member. And maybe you got, you know, there were for some families that had to bury multiple family members. And it's just, you know, but asset protection, it's not a sexy topic, but it's necessary.
Yeah. My father was an insurance agent for 30 years and he's not with us anymore. He had Alzheimer's. And we had that, like, that situation, and he was in the 70s and we had to deal with it. And my mother, you know, was able to figure out that, you know, because my father was an insurance agent, he had gotten some policies that had features that we were able to kick in. And because he had been an agent, he was selling these things to these clients. And so my mother had to figure out that she actually had it, and I helped her see it. But yeah, there's a lot of times, you know, people aren't that lucky. That they didn't have, you know, somebody didn't have the foresight. Like, my dad was selling insurance for so many years. He had the foresight to kind of set that up for himself. But you know, it isn't sexy. Like you said, it's not something anybody's thinking about. They're thinking about the next big thing, and it's like that. Whoa, that's a downer. And I think it's like, how do you get people to not think it's a downer, but understand it's an asset?
Well, and that's difficult because some people think if I talk about life insurance, I'm going to die. You're not going to die. I mean, but it's like almost like it's taboo. It's like if I say it out loud, it's going to happen. Yeah. No, it's not going to happen. But you have to have the conversation. You know, one thing about me working on different asset protection teams, I get to see stuff from all over the world, like how people do things differently. And each time I put together a new team, you know, I learn something new. You know, I don't have all the answers, but when you're working with other talented people, it improves your skill set. One thing that I tell people to consider if they don't already have this as part of their insurance plan is to have critical, critical care coverage.
Yeah, critical illness coverage. Yeah.
Yeah, illness. So, you know, if you are found to have a terminal illness and you have a decent sized policy, you can get spend it now, like go buy you a Lamborghini, go do this, go do that. And but you have to build the policy the right way.
Yeah. Cause I'm a cancer survivor and I had it when I was 27. I've been clear. So I went and got a special cancer coverage cause I was able to clear. Cause I've been in remission for like 20 years. And so I was able to get this special cancer policy that I went in for to a broker. And I found it's like, if I ever get it again, it will kick in. And I was able to get it at a really good rate. And I found, but I was looking for it. I was looking for what I had, you know, because I was in a situation where I had been a cancer person. So I have a different, if I go to a broker or an underwriter, I'm like, oh, you had it. So, but, you know, I found a loophole. I found a company that was providing this type of cancer. If you hadn't had it, then they gave me a deal. So it's not always impossible to get what you need. You might have to do a little work. You might have to get some people to look for you. But, you know, you have to kind of know the reality of what the situation is and then try to see what the best, you know, protection could be.
Now, and speaking of protection, because anytime, you know, I'm honored to be on a podcast, I want to really make sure that your listeners get something awesome out of the experience. So I have another asset protection tip for you. You ready for it? Okay. So I'm not sure if you are aware of the law that has recently sunsetted in New York that opened up the statute of limitations to allow people who have abuse claims to file civil lawsuits against their alleged abusers. Are you familiar with that?
I think I heard something in the news, but I didn't really track it that much. But okay. You can talk more about it.
Well, and I'm giving you the flip side. I'm not going to do the salacious part of it because a lot of it, you know, there's some salacious details out there about certain celebrities. But say, for instance, you are an individual who's been accused of something and you're saying that this thing did not happen. Somebody is defaming you. Part of asset protection is making sure you have adequate coverage. So insurance does not cover you for intentional acts. But depending on the type of homeowner's policy you have, it will defend against defamation claims. So, and I'm just using P. Diddy and Cassie again. Yeah, you know,
so Cassie's, he's got something where he could protect that asset with his other, the homeowners, you're saying?
Possibly. So like, say for instance, she sued him and he's saying these things are false and he wanted to fight it. Well, he can, you know, counter sue and, you know, sue her for defamation. And there may be some coverage under his homeowner's policy, but people don't look at stuff like that.
Yeah, I wouldn't even think the homeowners would cover that. Well, because it seems like it's the house, so I wouldn't really. How would they cover that? But yeah, it's interesting. That's why you need to know the law.
you have to. It's not on most policies. It's not just automatically there. It's an endorsement. So you know, but that's something that you need to be aware of. And if you don't have somebody who's working with you, depending on the type of industry that you have, like right now, it's very popular to be an influencer or vlogger on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And if you're reporting the news, like you have Tasha K, she's a huge YouTube vlogger.
YouTuber, yeah.
And so she's getting sued left and right, or at least they're threatening to sue. She needs some way to protect herself. And some of this could be through, a lot of it may not be through insurance, but it may be the way that her assets are structured. You know, who are you suing?
Rather than being in a sole proprietorship, if she put things that are trusted and put things out of tax ID rather than social security number, that thing we were talking about, she'd be more protected.
Mm-hmm. And also her possibly being an employee of a company instead of, you know, she may be the owner, but depending on the structure, there's certain liability for the company and for her individually. So there are so many legal.
She could create like an entertainment company that she is the the blogger, or she's the YouTuber, but you know, the company is not her, it's this other entity, and she's working for that company, whatever. But I mean, if you structure it in that way, because if you get the, the problem, I guess, with the YouTubers, if they're making statements about other people, then they can get sued about situations. And like, if it's not just all owner created material, and it's just like they wrote themselves, but if they're actually commenting about things happening in real time, then you run the risk of a liability.
Well, and not just them, but they are getting sued. Like if I'm on your show right now and I say something that's derogatory, well, you allowed me to come on your show and say something derogatory about someone. So, you know, that person can also sue you for having me on your platform. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's something that other, you know, you may want to consider, like, oh my gosh, did Sheree sign a form? But hopefully I'm not getting you in any trouble today.
Yeah. We have the ability to have forms. I haven't looked into that because we haven't tried to go into areas where we tend to go. You know, I'm not more of the kind of, I don't know, like a TV show gossip type of thing. So I usually don't go in that zone, but and I try to stay away from things that may go that way. But it's probably important to maybe think about doing those forms. That we have the ability as podcasters to have forms where people could sign like legal documents. And I looked into it, but like I didn't at the time when I've been doing so many podcasts, I haven't been hit with anything. Cross fingers, but you know, it depends on what you're doing.
Right.
But yeah, it's a good thing to think about. I hadn't thought about that until like you brought it up. It's like, it's not a bad idea.
Cause see, you know, you'll mess around, invite Kanye on the show, and Kanye will say something crazy.
Oh yeah, you get the bigger the guys you get. Like they do, it's like if I start getting the A-listers on, even the B-listers, then you run the. Like a lot of times, I'm like, if you live in the underground, then you're kind of flying under the radar. But once you get to the A-listers and the B-listers and start having them come on, there's a tendency for them to kind of, you know, they go big. When you go big, you can get hit big.
Exactly.
So, I've always kind of like, well, once you go big, you got to change your whole structure, you know, but maybe before you go big, you got to prepare for it. What you're saying is maybe before somebody goes, well, I'm not at that level, so maybe I should actually act like I'm at that level. So if I actually, you know, next year I get a big guest and I wasn't structured up, then I'm suddenly going to get hit. So that's kind of that's very good advice.
So yeah, definitely. So I just, you know, tell people, plan for tomorrow today.
Yeah. That's your mantra. I mean, it makes sense. It makes sense that a lot, and I see a lot of people will come up with excuses why they can't do it. You know, and I even myself is like, wow, I should have those legal forms. I should have the releases. I should set myself up. And so like you can find like where you're vulnerable. You should look into it. Like a lot of people don't want to look into their vulnerabilities because it kind of like, oh, I'm kind of wide open here. Maybe I don't want to think about that, but maybe you do have to start to protect yourself.
Oh yeah, definitely. And then, you know, no matter what you think, like, I don't have the time, I don't have the money, just start by committing something to writing and then reviewing it on a regular basis. And then if you feel like you have more time or more money to invest into an official process, then start setting things up. But I'm telling you, you already have a team. You already have a team. You already have a banker, insurance agent, all these people. Put them together to work for you in your business.
Yeah, that makes sense. So and you're in, when you people come to you, you're the person that does that. You're the person that sets that meeting up, that schedules that for your client.
And I do an assessment because, you know, there may be things that you're missing. Maybe you don't have standard operating procedures. And so we got to get that going. You don't have any metrics, any key performance indicators. So those are all things that we look at. And I try to use people that are already working with you. You got some folks that'll come in and try to bring their own people in all the time and replace folks. But if you have people that you have relationships with who are familiar with your business, let's get them on the same page about what you need. Because they're not always independently proactive. You know, the first thing I do on the law firm side, if somebody comes to me and they need business help, you know, I'm like, well, who's your accountant? That is one of the first people that I talk to because I may set up this beautiful legal structure, but from a tax standpoint, it doesn't work because I don't understand the tax strategy that you have. And so now I've just messed all your income up.
Yeah, you probably need to figure out, like, yeah, they got this complicated tax arrangement. You don't understand what the reason is. Yeah, you probably, yeah, you're missing part of the picture.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's always like when somebody goes into, you know, I'm a producer and somebody, I'm arranging something. Somebody could come in if they don't understand what my vision is. They say, what do you need that for? Like, why are you doing this? It's like, well, you don't see the big picture. This is like an orchestral piece with movements. It has a lot of complexity. It's not this. But if you thought it was something, you know, you have no idea. So you're like, well, you can take that out. You can take that out. I was like, well, no, you can't, because that's like part of the structure, the foundation. You know, it's, I think people don't realize, like, that you have to understand somebody's intentions. And if you don't read that, like, you need the accountant's intentions, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's important. Because I work in like software design. We have arrangements, like this standard, like SOWs, and then we also have like, okay, we have like a tolerance for like, this is a task that we've signed up with another company to do, and we have so much of a range before we actually violate what we agreed to. We agreed we're going to provide this service every day of the week. And as a backup, we can do this and another back. If we miss our key points, then we violate that contract. So we have to understand what our work orders are and what our SOWs are. So that, like, oh, we've been missing these key points and we're going to lose the contract. You know, so we're constantly doing an assessment because it's like every day. So we're aware of that. We're not even doing that yearly. We're doing that like nightly. You know, but
yeah, makes a difference.
Yeah. So is it more often that you should, do you think it's just once a year, but some people need it more than once a year?
No.
That kind of review.
I mean, I would say quarterly. And, you know, we're in a virtual world. You don't have to have people sitting around a conference room. Get them on Zoom, you know, and it doesn't have to be a half a day. Maybe it's an hour quarterly for people to check in. You have an agenda prior to the meeting. You should be getting monthly reports anyway, in some form or fashion. And so it's like, hey, what's changed? You know, where were we at this time last year? What are we looking to, you know, to do coming up? Especially depending on your fiscal year. You want to make sure that those meetings are set up so that at the end of your fiscal year, because everybody does not have December 31st as a fiscal year. A lot of companies do just because it's really easy. But especially if you do not, want your fiscal year and the end of the tax year to conflict. So you need strategies in place to kind of, you know, ebb and flow throughout the year so that nothing is missed.
Yeah, you don't want to miss your core deadlines because you didn't understand right here. A lot of times, like famous people, like Mick, you know, they had management and then they missed their tax reporting and they assumed that their people were doing it. And then it's like, well, they weren't doing it.
Right.
So it was like, you're like, oh, like you got to be careful. Like you really have to be part of your process. I think you can't just hand over the reins 100%. I think you do need to be involved to at least understand what's going on to a certain degree, right?
Definitely. And one thing we look at as well, job descriptions. It could be that you have a business manager and you have not communicated to the business manager that they are responsible for getting your taxes filed, not them personally doing it, but for hiring the person to do it or getting the information to the person who's going to do your taxes. So it could be just a function of your job descriptions are not sufficient to support your business because people don't know what they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, you made assumptions that, oh, this person's going to do it, and then you just didn't, you know, like, oh, they're doing it. Like, you probably need to check that. So you have a health check. Yeah, like, is that health check? Like, are my taxes being filed? Are my regulatory responsibilities being met? Am I actually doing the reports I'm supposed to do? Like, if I have regulatory requirements on my business, you know, don't say, well, I'm not into that. Like, make sure that you've actually been hitting those deadlines and actually sending in what the guidelines say you're supposed to do.
Right. And not only are my taxes being filed, but are my tax liability payments being made? Because you can file the taxes, but if you're not making the payments on anything that you owe the government, that's not good either.
You're going to get hit. And we've heard of like big celebrities getting hit with like suddenly like they didn't know they didn't pay the taxes. It's like, well, they assume their business manager was doing it or something. I don't know. But it seems like that scenario isn't unheard of. That I've heard a lot of different people run into issues like Willie Nelson and I think Wesley Snipes, I kind of heard about. But, you know, they had issues with the IRS, both of them.
Oh, yeah. Even recently, Shakira, you know, there was a huge dispute about where she
in her country.
So, I mean, those are things you need to look at. Mary J. Blige, you know, was recently hit with a huge tax bill. And I think maybe some of that was a function of her divorce, where her husband was her manager for a period of time. Sometimes things get missed or overlooked. But for somebody who's been in the business that long, Mary, why are your taxes not filed and or paid? So, you know, having a good asset protection team can help you.
Yeah, I think it really comes down to, and we're kind of winding down, is I think artists are so into their artist mindset, right? That they feel like, well, I don't need to even get into that. I got somebody to do that for me. But your name is still on things. And I think that's where the bottom line is like, well, you're still kind of like in charge of your life, right? So
exactly.
So you have to check on it or it'll burn you. You know, it might not be something you want to do, but it's like, you know, you got to get up in the morning. You got to, there's certain things you got to do. And whether you like it or not, maybe you just need somebody like yourself to make it easier to digest and understand and have that trusted person. So I really thank you for being on the show, because I think this is something a lot of people miss or don't think is important. It's like the last thing they want to do. And it's like probably one of the foundational things they need to be doing.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you very much. And again, your website will be fully clickable when we're published. And I do encourage people to click through on that and actually connect with you. And they can actually set up an appointment with you on that website.
Now, that website will take you to the free webinar that I have once a month. And okay. So, you know, if you have questions, you can reach me on socials. My handle is Cherie Speaks on all socials. And that's the best way to catch me. Probably on LinkedIn. Yeah, I'm more active on LinkedIn.
Oh, great. Well, thank you very much for being on the show again. And I hope you have a great new year. And, happy holidays at this point of the year. And thank you again for being on the show.
Thank you.